Jesus said to his disciples, "A rich man had a steward who was reported to him for squandering his property. He summoned him and said, 'What is this I hear about you? Prepare a full account of your stewardship, because you can no longer be my steward.' The steward said to himself, 'What shall I do now that my master is taking the position of steward away from me? I am not strong enough to dig, and I am ashamed to beg. I know what I shall do, so that when I am removed from the stewardship, they may welcome me into their homes.' He called in his master's debtors one by one. To the first he said, 'How much do you owe my master?' He replied, 100 measures of olive oil. He said to him, 'Here is your promissory note. Sit down and quickly write one for 50. Then to another the steward said, 'And you, how much do you owe?' He replied, 100 cores of wheat. The steward said to him, 'Here is your promissory note. Write one for 80. And the master commended that dishonest steward for acting prudently. For the children of this world are more prudent in dealing with their own generation than are the children of light. I tell you, make friends for yourselves with dishonest wealth, so that when it fails, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. The person who is trustworthy in very small matters is also trustworthy in great ones. And the person who is dishonest in very small matters is also dishonest in great ones. If therefore you are not trustworthy with dishonest wealth, who will trust you with true wealth? If you are not trustworthy with what belongs to another, who will give you what is yours? No servant can serve two masters. He will either hate one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and mammon." The Gospel of the Lord. There are gospels that I think every preacher is definitely going to turn to some commentaries before he preaches on, and this is one of them, because this is really puzzling, and it really seems like Jesus is praising sinfulness. He's praising, you know, theft and dishonesty. You know, parables are not really usually very straightforward stories. There's usually, when Jesus tells parables, there's usually some sort of twist in it, right? Something unexpected, something that you didn't see coming, something that maybe doesn't immediately make sense. But the thing is, the key to interpreting most parables is precisely that twist, right? So the part of the story that takes you by surprise, that maybe you're tempted to just sort of gloss over, that's actually where we need to look to find the meaning of the parable. So obviously the twist here is that the master praises the dishonest steward for stealing from him. And Jesus himself, stepping out of the parable, says, "I tell you, make friends for yourselves with dishonest wealth, so that when it fails, you'll be welcomed into eternal dwellings." That's very confusing. It also makes us want to ask what all these phrases mean, right? What exactly is dishonest wealth? And what does it mean that Jesus wants us to make friends with it? So first of all, just to kind of simply break down the parable a little bit, and maybe point out a few things that I learned from my going to commentaries to share with you. So the steward, of course, is the man, he obviously his master is very rich, and the steward is the one who manages his finances, right? Keeps his books, basically, and manages the accounts, what people owe him, collect that money and whatnot. And the beginning of the parable says that the steward was reported for squandering his property. Now, here's something brand new that I didn't know until yesterday. The word in the Greek, the original Greek for this text, for squandering property, is the same word that in the Greek is used for what the prodigal son did, right? The prodigal son wasted his father's property in dissolute living, and the unjust steward wastes his master's property, his lord's property. So there's already a parallel here just linguistically between what the parable we heard last week and the one we heard this week, right? We have people wasting things that don't belong to him, right? Just in last week it was wasting his father's living. This week it's wasting his master's goods. So the master calls him in and says, make an accounting because you can't work for me anymore. And the guy, and you gotta commend his honest self-assessment. He looks at himself, says, I am too weak to dig and I'm too proud to beg. Right? So I can't just go out and do labor, and I cannot stand out in the streets and ask for money so I can eat every day. So I gotta figure something out. And so he cooks the books, right? He says, he basically is, you know, upon being fired for being dishonest with his master's wealth, he just is more dishonest with his master's wealth. And he starts calling in debtors, right? People that owe his master money or owe him, you know, products. And then he starts reducing their debt. This is an interesting thing because in providing for his future, he doesn't take money directly from the master and put it in his pocket. Rather, he reaches out to the people that owe his master, and he dishonestly reduces their debt. So he's using his master's wealth, essentially, to pay off other people's debts. And he's doing it so that when he's tossed out, he'll have somewhere to go, and these people will like him and receive him into their homes. And the surprise twist that Jesus ends the parable with is that the master commended that dishonest steward for acting prudently. And so obviously in telling us this parable, Jesus is commending the dishonest steward for acting prudently. Now, we want to be really clear about what Jesus is praising, what the master in the parable is praising. Right? The master is not praising theft, and neither is Jesus. The fact that we even call it dishonest, or in other translations I've read, Jesus calls it unrighteous wealth, that it's being named that what's done is evil and unjust. So he's not praising theft. What the master praises and what Jesus commands us to do better is he praises the prudence of the steward. He praises the fact that the steward had a little bit of a, you know, farsightedness, that he looked into the future, saw what was coming, and did something to provide for himself. And what Jesus tells us, and when he talks about the children of the light versus the children of this age, he really means, you know, good and evil, right? He means those who love this world and are attached to this world and are only trying to bring up this world, versus those who are working towards building up their life in the next world, right? Those would be the children of light. And he says, the children of this age, right, which does not just mean people living today. It means people that are living for this world and this world alone. He says, the children of this age are more prudent than the children of the light. And it's actually kind of easy for us to understand why. Because the children of this age, for the most part, know very well how to look ahead and provide for their future. How to make sure that next week we're going to have food to eat and be able to pay our mortgages. And, you know, maybe a lot of us are even good at saving for retirement. That's really providing for the future, right? Creating some security for ourselves so that we don't, we don't end up poor and having to dig or having to beg, right? So the children of this age are actually very good at providing for their future. We might see an implicit question in what Jesus is saying, which is children of the light, right? Well, that's assuming that we are children of the light, that we are in fact working for the next world. I think maybe an implicit question here could be, what monies have you invested in your eternal accounts? What have you done to provide for your eternal future? St. Augustine, in commenting on this passage, he says, you know, the dishonest steward, the people of this world, they will sacrifice a lot for the security of this life, and this life is going to end. What are we sacrificing? What are we doing to prepare for eternity, which does not end? Right? And this is a theme that comes up more than once in the Gospel of Luke, Right? We'll remember another image Jesus uses of storing up treasures in heaven, right? Not treasures on earth, because treasures on earth don't last. And even if they do last your whole life, you don't, if you'll forgive the triteness of the phrase, you don't get to take them with you. So Jesus, especially in the Gospel of Luke, wants us to basically invest in spiritual treasures and treasures in the next kingdom that are secure, that can't be taken away from us, that robbers can't steal, that moths can't destroy. And so the implicit question, I think, stands in front of us: what have we done to prepare for our spiritual future? And what is Jesus suggesting that we do to prepare for our spiritual future? Well, he tells us this: make friends for yourselves with dishonest wealth, so that, or we might say unrighteous money, so that when it fails, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Now, hopefully it's obvious to all of us that Jesus is not telling us to steal so that we can provide for our future. The key to understanding that is when he says, so that when it fails, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Right, so this parable is eschatological. It's looking towards the consummation of time. He's stepping out of the parable, and he's not talking to us about how to be sound financial planners, right? He's talking about how do we prepare a dwelling place for ourselves in heaven. And that should color our understanding of what he means by dishonest wealth. And if we simply look at the image he gives us of the dishonest steward, when he realizes that he's in a bad way, he takes what belongs to his master and he pays the debts of others so that others will welcome him into an eternal habitation. So in somehow Jesus is telling us, take what belongs to your master, the Lord, and pay off the debts of others so that you will be received into eternal habitations. Now, one thing that we want to really be clear about to understand what Jesus is saying, and this is usually the kind of comment that somebody after Mass will call me a communist for saying, but I'll risk that. Everything that we have is gift. I'll say that again. Everything that we have is gift. And there's a reason that the church talks so much about stewardship. And usually, for instance, when we're trying to increase tithing, for instance, we talk about stewardship. And we're not talking about it because it's euphemistic and because it's a nice way of saying, give us your money. We're talking about it because the concept that underlies it is that we are stewards, like the steward in this parable is a steward. That our Father, our Master, our Lord is very wealthy and has entrusted us with some measure of his wealth so that we may manage it and provide for others with it. And the gifts that the Lord gives us vary, right? We don't all have the same gifts. We're not all equally gifted, right? The Lord doesn't really distribute his gifts fairly, if we're honest. But, the kind of cheesy way we always talk about the gifts that we're given is our time, talent, and treasure. But this only makes sense, this passage can only really make sense if we really understand that our gifts are given to us by the Lord, and they're not really ours. Maybe from a worldly perspective, right, the church also defends the right to private property and all that. So from a worldly perspective, what's ours is ours. But from a heavenly perspective, it's all gift. And kind of a proof of that is the fact that we can't take it with us when we go. Right? When we go to heaven, hopefully, at the resurrection of the dead, we are not going to have all of our worldly stuff with us because it's not actually part of us. It doesn't really belong to us. It's some portion of creation that has been entrusted to our care. Or maybe it's some portion of creation that we've been able to accrue because of the gifts and the opportunities that the Lord has given us. Either way, we need to see it all as gift. And whatever gifts that we have, whether we have a lot of treasure or we have a lot of talent or something, the first thing we need to be thinking of is, I have been entrusted with something, and how am I using it? Because if I squander the gifts completely, like in the parable of the talents, I'm in trouble, right? If I just use the gifts that I've been given for my own sake, for my own security, my own enjoyment, then what the gospel tells us is, great, you've had your reward. And to me, that's a frightening thing to hear, because I don't know about you, but I've never experienced anything in this life that is enough of a reward for my eternity, right? But the gospel tells us, if you want to take your gifts and just keep them to yourself, you've had your reward, right? Whereas those who give to the poor, those who take care of those in need, they are building up their reward in heaven. So that's what we really want to do. We want not our reward now, we want our reward in heaven. So I got to kind of get to the point here. But the first thing we want, I think, to say in interpretation of this passage is we need to care for the poor. That's got to be our first level of understanding. We have been entrusted with things that the Lord intends us to share in the management of his wealth. I heard a story, and it's secondhand, but it is secondhand because I heard it from somebody who was there. Apparently, years ago in Chicago, Cardinal George was giving a dinner with big-time Chicago benefactors, and you can imagine Chicago. There are probably some very big benefactors in Chicago, So he's in a room with rich people, and at the end of the night, he is speaking to them, and he's saying the final prayer, and he ends by saying this. He says, "By the way, the poor need you to keep them out of poverty, but you need the poor to keep you out of hell." And then he just walked off the stage. So I wouldn't have the guts to say it myself, but it was Cardinal George. I'm handing it on. But let's also go a little bit deeper. So we need to be thinking about the poor, right? If we use our, and here we're talking about just plain old wealth. If we only use our wealth for ourselves, then we're gonna have our reward here. But if we can use our wealth to pay off the debts of others, so to speak, if we use our wealth to provide for those who the Lord has given less in this life, then we are building up something in the next kingdom, something that can't be taken away or destroyed, right? Something that's going to last for eternity. But I think we also want to attend to spiritual wealth, because that's the good stuff, right? We have access to spiritual wealth that does not belong to us. Right. On the cross, Jesus won infinite merit, and he entrusted it to the church. And we have the ability not only to access that for ourselves, but also access it. We have the ability not only to access it for ourselves, but also to access it for others. So here's a very clear example of wealth that belongs to our master, not to us, but we can take our master's wealth. And actually, here's where the parable breaks down. The master wants us to take the wealth that he has earned and entrusted to us, and he wants us to pay off the debts of others. All right, so there are things that we can look at and I think be really intentional about, right? First of all, take the opportunities that are around you. You come to Mass every Sunday, right? Maybe some of you come to Mass every day. And when you come to Mass, there are infinite merits available to us in the offering of the Holy Sacrifice. And the church teaches that the church teaches that the primary intention of Mass is the priest's intention. Right? So that's the one that if you come in and say, "I would like to have a Mass said," and we put your name in the book, sometimes we read the name, or it's in the bulletin. That's the primary intention for the Mass, but every single person participating in the Holy Sacrifice can also have an intention, and that becomes a secondary intention. So here's an opportunity just sort of laying around. You're here at Mass. You could just sort of come in and sit down and like wait for it to be over, but you could also come in and say, "I know all these people that are in need, family members, friends, souls in purgatory, whatever, and I'm going to give my Mass intention today. I'm going to apply the fruits of the sacrifice that I have access to because I'm participating in that sacrifice, and I'm going to apply it to the spiritual good." Right? That is taking wealth, and I mean wealth, that you did not earn and that does not belong to you, and you are paying off the debts of others so that you can build for yourself a welcome into eternal inheritance. Right? Intercessory prayer is so powerful. Right? We could imagine how much help that you could provide to others if you just said, "I'm going to do one devotional practice a day, but I'm going to offer it for intentions." Right? And it could be something really like a Chaplet of Divine Mercy. Chaplet of Divine Mercy is sort of like praying the rosary, but much, much shorter, right? That's why I like it. You pray a chaplet in like 3 minutes. And if you said, I'm going to pray every day at the Divine Mercy Hour or something, or before I go to bed, a chaplet of Divine Mercy, and I'm going to offer it for others. Well, you are taking spiritual wealth from your master, and you're applying it to the debts of others. And I bet you, too, if you start doing this, if you start developing a mentality for intercession and for distributing wealth, I bet you, really quickly, your list of intentions would grow very long, right? You might right now, if I ask you, think about some intentions. You might like think and come up with five or six things that people that you need prayers for. I bet if you started doing this habitually, you would discover so many intentions, so much need that you wouldn't even be able to get to it all, right? So, I don't want to just keep going with examples, but hopefully we get the idea, right? The Lord, He is telling us that, look, the children of this age are really good at providing for their future in this world, which is not going to last forever. We need to be more prudent in sort of investing in our eternal accounts. We need to be more prudent about building up wealth in heaven where it can't be taken away from us, can't be destroyed. And the way we do that is we take the gifts that have been entrusted to us and we distribute them freely to others. So we take the wealth of our Lord and we give it to our friends.